This episode and the entire rest of this season is proudly brought to you by Pregnant Together, a virtual community for queer folks, solo parents, and anyone who's ever felt different through the process of growing your family. Run by queer midwife Maria Goodman, the community offers tons of resources for every stage of family building, from trying to conceive to parenting. You get monthly live support groups. You get access to advice from a queer healthcare provider. And best of all, you get connection with a community of folks going through the same ups and downs that you are. I love this. I really do. And guess what? Listeners of the Queer Family Podcast get their first month for free, y'all. So you're going to click the link in our show notes to get your free month and get started now. Come on, build that community. And to learn more about it, you can check out www.pregnanttogether.com. Go get in those communities, y'all.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I think, you know, just saying because you have a genetic predisposition for something doesn't mean that you should be, you know, not have the opportunity to contribute your genetic material. And then, it comes down to like giving people the choices that they want when building their family, just like race. And, you know, you've talked about race on this podcast a lot. And I just wanted to bring that like disability aspect to it, too, that, you know, those choices are even more limited. I don't think you're going to find a donor with a disability.
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I'm your host, and you, my friends, are tuning into the show whose mission is to highlight, celebrate, uplift, and normalize LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. And this episode, of course, does just that. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Jennifer and Vanessa. They had reached out a while back because they were a bit triggered by a couple of episodes I aired titled Diving Deep into Donor Conception with Lisa the Therapist and Dr. Mark, which was all about donor conception, as you can imagine. And they were a little bit triggered because in the episode, my two guests stressed very highly that you should check medical records first before going with anything else when you're searching for a donor. And so they wrote me this long, beautiful email where they explained, you know, Jennifer has a disability. And when it comes to the donor pool, they wanted to make the point that not everybody wants to weed out certain genetics. And who are the banks or the powers in charge or whatever? Who are they to say which donors get through versus which donors don't? Who are they to decide for us on what kind of donor choices we get? And I found it interesting. I said, you know what? Why don't you come on and let's talk about this? Let's talk about this in an episode. So we did. And it's a really interesting conversation that turned basically into a kind of an argument for true inclusion, which is something I care deeply about. And if you listen to this show, you probably do too. So I'm not going to say anything more about it. It's a wonderful conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it. I'm going to end this intro a little bit earlier than normal because I actually have the flu and I'm sick as a dog right now. I'm laughing through it, but woo, I got to get back in bed. And let me just say shout out to my wife because I have had a fever for 4 days now and my wife has picked up. I usually do the school drop off and school pickup and, you know, all the things that have to do with the kids and the day-to-day thing on Monday through Friday. And she has taken it like a champ. Like shout out to, I'm going to say gay parents, but I know it's not just gay parents. I know non-queer parents do this as well, but this is a love letter to my wife right now. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Anne, for picking up the slack and helping me out and letting me lay in bed and wallow in misery for the past 4 days. And as soon as I stop rolling this tape, I am going to get right back in bed. So thank you, Anne. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you enjoy this episode and I will see you next week, hopefully in a much better state. All right, Helen, Beulah. You know what? Helen and Beulah have really picked up the slack too. Now I'm just feverishly talking. They've really picked up the slack too. I mean, they even made me a cup of coffee this morning. Can you believe that? Made me a cup of coffee. They made it wrong, but still, they're making efforts too. And Nicole as well. Everybody, my whole community, please roll that tape. Thank you so much.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Vanessa and Jennifer.
Hi.
It is nice to have you.
We're happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Why don't we get right into your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are, why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. I'm putting the timer up. I will never cut you off. Are we ready?
Ready.
Okay, on your marks. Get set. Go.
Hi, my name is Jennifer. I am a 35-year-old cis lesbian woman.
And I'm Vanessa, and I'm a 34-year-old cis lesbian woman.
And we are trying to get pregnant with my egg and...
Your right? body.
And my body. Yep, that's the other half of it.
Via IUI.
That's it.
Under time. That was awesome. Did you practice
Attempted
that?
To. We, Attempted yeah. to in the car.
Good job. Good job. All right. So a couple of cisgendered lesbians living in the South on your journey of getting pregnant via donor sperm and IUI. Okay. Let's take it back a bit. Let's take it back to when you met.
Sure. Yeah. So I am from Northern Virginia, D.C. originally. Grew up there, went to school there, worked there for about 10 years, and then moved down to Raleigh. And then when I moved down, I was single and ready to mingle. So I was on the dating apps right away. And that was in October of 2020 that I moved down here. And then we met in January of 2021. So still very much like peak COVID, having to find like outdoor spots to date. And because this is North Carolina and Raleigh is like in the middle, right? Like some places took it very seriously, some places did not. So just trying to find venues for dates that did take COVID seriously.
Were you living that gay lifestyle before?
Yes, but I was very late to come out. I did not even realize I was gay until I was 31. So I had only dated one other person seriously before, one other woman seriously before moving down here.
Now I want to dig into the fact that you didn't realize you were a lesbian. Like, can we dig just a little bit?
Of course.
Because I'm sure people will resonate with that. And it took me a while too. Not as long as you though.
Yeah, no, I'm always happy to talk about that because I think, you know, it makes me realize how important representation is. Like, you know, did not have any gay, queer people at all in my life, except for one, which is very sad. I think about him often. My mom had a really good gay male friend from college, but he passed away, I think, when I was in the sixth grade from AIDS. And so, you know, and he was in New York. Like I said, we were in Northern Virginia. So I don't think I ever met him in person, but he was really good at origami and would always send me like origami paper and things. Anyways,
of course. Yeah.
So that was the only like queer person in my life that I knew of. Yeah, it was just very much like everything was so heteronormative. Like you're going to grow up, date a man, blah, blah, blah. And like I never had that vision. Like I could never envision it. Yeah, I still to this day don't know what made me do it. That's our dog in the background.
Our dogs have been already messing everything up for us. So if you're watching the video, dogs are everywhere.
So I had been with a guy for like 4.5 years. Like we lived together. We worked really well together, but like ultimately, like it just wasn't going to work out long term for various factors. So like when I broke up with him, I started dating guys again. And then I like to this day, I still don't know what made me do it, but I changed the settings on my dating app to like men and women. And then yeah, once I started dating women, I was like, oh, this feels really natural. And I have no desire to keep dating men. Like I don't see myself going in that direction. Like this is way better. So yeah, it was more of just like, I don't know what made me try it. But as soon as I tried it, I was like, this is me.
My wife's story is like kind of similar. So her work, it was like a traveling work that she did for some time. She was rooming with like one of her coworkers. They roomed together a lot. And then like, she's like the way she describes it, she's going to be so annoyed at me telling the story. And I'm probably going to get something wrong. And then she's going to come home and be like, oh, so that's how it happened. And then I'm going to have to figure out what the hell she's talking about because I recorded this so long ago. Anyway, she was laying in bed because they were roommates and she just turned over one night and then they just started kissing. She's like, I don't even think about it. It just started happening. I'm like, what? What? I was so in turmoil the first time I kissed a woman. Like it was like okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do, you know what I mean? So it's just, listen, all of our stories are, that's why representation matters. There it is.
Yes, there it is. Absolutely.
Okay, so let's take it over to you, Vanessa.
Oh, so I am from Charlotte, North Carolina, so really not far from here. I don't think I ever came out. I have a gay older brother. It's just the two of us. And he did all the hard work. He did the sitting our parents down and coming out, and that went so well, it just wasn't really a thing. And so I don't know. And I work in, this is going to be so stereotypical, but I work in women's professional soccer. Just caveat, not all of them are lesbians, I promise. But
it would be nice if they were, because it would be,
you know, right.
So you never really came out, but like, did you know you were gay your whole?
Yeah, I dated one guy in high school. We dated for like 5 years, but it felt very, I mean, I'm not going to discredit him at all. He was a lovely human. And I think at 15, you convince yourself, because mm-hmm. everybody tells you to, mm-hmm. that that's the path you're going to go and you're in love, but you're, I was not. I mean, and then it wasn't till college that I started figuring myself out, but then I ended up moving. I moved to West Virginia to work and then Texas to work. And it just felt like every move I had to go further and further into the closet because I never felt safe.
Right.
Especially in Texas.
No.
And that was in 2015, 2016. So right as Trump was being elected. Then I took the job in North Carolina to be closer to home. And while the environment for statewide didn't always feel like the most inclusive, working in women's soccer did. I mean, it truly, yeah. everybody knew just, I guess, from the conversation with me when I got to work.
I feel like in women's soccer, the assumption is the opposite. Like, you assume that everybody's just gay. You're surprised when they're straight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're like, oh, you have a boyfriend? Oh. Hmm.
Yeah. No,
it's like, bummer.
Yeah, so when we met and I knew that it was definitely something serious, and I was head over heels that when I called my parents and was like, well, I am bringing somebody home. Her name's Jennifer. And they were like, great.
Yeah, there was never any.
There was never. So there wasn't really a
big deal about
thing
it.
About it. Shout out to my brother, Eric, for paving the way.
Good job. How much older is Eric?
2.5 years.
Oh, okay. So like, so you were pretty close to in age. Okay, awesome. So you meet at a dating app.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bumble.
I've never done the dating apps because I'm old and I'm also a serial monogamist. So.
Oh, I was not good at it. I mean, I will give all credit to my best friend. We got on the dating apps at the same time. She's straight and we were just messing around, really seeing what we could do. And I came across her profile and froze. I was like, oh, wow. And my best friend was like, just swipe. And I was terrified. I was like, no, there's no way I'm going to swipe. Like, it's just... And so then I did, and it matched, and I almost fell off the bed. I was like, no way.
All right. So you meet, and you're in it to win it. Is there a marriage? Do you get married? Mm-hmm. What happened?
Yep. We're pretty typically lesbian in that. Mm-hmm. Like, we met in January of 2021, and we were married in December of 2022. So
okay. U-Haul situation.
Yeah. A little bit. Yep. Yeah. I will say, like, we started looking for engagement rings like 6 months in. It was pretty fast.
Yeah. Oh
my God. Who proposed
first?
I did first because I was like, I would like to. Yeah. I wanted to be that. And then we went to our engagement photo shoot and she surprised me and proposed back. So.
Oh, yeah. I love how we be doing us queer folks. Yeah, that's fun. Okay. Yeah. And I love that you have to ask who proposed in our relationship. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's, well, you know, there's so much to learn. You get married, you do the thing. And when do babies? I feel like babies were already talked about. And when did the talk of babies come in?
Our second date.
Well, I don't think it was like in the way of I want to have kids right now. It was more like I'm going to test the waters and see.
Yeah.
Because if we're not compatible in this, we're going to have to walk
away.
Right,
exactly.
And so I think one of us broached the subject about how we both really had a strong urge to adopt. I had always felt that way. I don't know what it is. I've always felt like adoption is or was going to be the route that I wanted to take. And so then when I brought it up with her and she said the same thing, I was like, is this normal or real? Or like, what are the chances that we had found each other in that sense?
Yeah. I mean, my experience, both dating men and women, it was impossible to find somebody who was willing to have a non-biological child and to find somebody who like didn't care about that at all. I was like, finally. So yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was amazing.
Fast forward, obviously.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So it's interesting. I think the state of politics and definitely in the South, we realized that there is a real fear of wanting to make sure one of us was biologically tied from a legal perspective to make sure that, like, I don't know. I don't know if we're overreacting or.
Yeah. I mean, I can provide some historical perspective because I love reading nonfiction and have learned a lot about the Native American population. And, you know, up until the 70s, the 1970s, to be clear, they were still taking children from Native families and putting them in boarding schools. And, you know, it's just to me, like when Roe v. Wade got, or not even when it got overturned, when it was leaked that it was going to be overturned, that's when the conversation shifted for us, because we're like, you know, we live in America, specifically in the South. And if as a country we've done this once and it looks like we're taking steps backwards instead of forwards, like I don't want to put us in a position where we bring a child into our home, you know, fall in love and have a family, and then the government decides to intervene. And yeah, like Vanessa said, I'm sure tons of people would say, like, you're overreacting. There's no way that could happen. But I think, you know, just knowing the history of our country, and, you know, we'll get into more of that from a different perspective soon too in this conversation, but it has helped us make decisions that we're confident about as a family. And again, like, I totally understand if other people wouldn't agree with that, but that's where.
Well, I mean, it's not a risk you're willing to take. And the fact is that it is a risk. Like, you can't deny that that is a factor that you too had to think about when you started your baby, your family building journey, right? It's not fair.
Yeah.
It's really screwed up. And that sucks for you. Like, I feel mad for you that you didn't get to use your chosen route, which is a really great route. And in my opinion, a noble a route. And, you know, there's so many children who need homes and all the things. So
I think our overall goal and hope that we're definitely going to put out in the universe now is that we are able to get pregnant and have, I know I'll have to go through the adoption process and everything like that, but that she would have the baby. And then after that, we would open our home to more of like a foster situation or foster to adopt. That we do know that reunification is the goal in those situations. And we're all for that and supportive of that. We just would like to provide a safe home for kids, because there are a lot of children out there who need that. So I think the goal would be to start and have one, and then hopefully from there.
Yeah. Take it as you go. You take it as you go.
Yeah. Vanessa was always more open to the foster route. I was more of like, I at least want one child that we can call our own and raise throughout the whole life cycle. And, you know, I also think too that, like, this may sound really weird, but, you know, I think we need some, like, parenthood practice before we open our home to, like, foster kids. You know, at least if you start with a baby, you can, like, figure it out and the baby won't really know what's going on. But I'm like, if we just start, like, go from zero to bringing, like, a six-year-old in our house, and the six-year-old can definitely tell, like, you guys have no idea what you're doing. Like,
I don't think we're ever going to know what we're doing, but.
True. Nobody ever knows what they're doing, but I at least don't want to put some poor foster kid who already has enough going on in their lives through us trying to figure out basic parenting stuff.
So you switch plans, you pivot.
We pivot and kind of have to start from scratch and figure out, like, how do we start the process? And actually, that's how I came across your podcast. Was I was looking for any sort of information. And unfortunately, fortunately, I don't know, there's only one, and you're an amazing podcast, and you've helped us so much. But I'm like, man, there's nothing out there for us.
It's sparse. It's true. It's a sparse.
Yeah.
More now. They're popping up, but it's still a sparse landscape. Okay. So you start listening to this here show, and what do?
Started reading books. Shout out to, you've had Liam on your podcast, I know, at least a couple times. So read their book, Queer Conceptions.
Queer Conception. Thank you. Yeah.
And then
Baby Making for Everybody.
Yep. You also had them on your podcast. Yeah.
And then we had to have the discussion, I guess everybody has, of who carries, which was another little fun wrinkle. I was diagnosed with endometriosis a couple years ago. I had to have a very real conversation with my doctor of plans. I had the ablation surgery once. They put an IUD in at that time. I am somebody who can't have birth control. It just no matter what it seems to be, it makes me suicidal almost. Like, it just really messes with my emotions. And so that was the best option to help you with endometriosis, but my body just was rejecting it. Right. And so I had to have a really serious conversation with myself and with her. And ultimately, I did choose to have a hysterectomy, a total hysterectomy.
Oh, wow.
I had that in August.
This year,
which was such a weird feeling to have the hysterectomy. And then the very next morning, she had to go to the clinic to have
an ultrasound.
Yeah, this is baseline.
Like, you were just starting the process.
Second or third. Like, we had been like getting our feet wet or had been trying for a little bit, but not very long.
Yeah. And so it was very weird.
Yeah, totally. That's an experience. And that's also an experience that's pretty unique to our queer families, right? You know,
yeah.
I mean, the beauty is you have a wife who can carry a child, which is beautiful. And then it's also, you know, you don't have, you know, you had a hysterectomy, so you don't even have the option. And so you're going to watch your wife go through it. So that's another aspect to think about.
I felt very good about the decision. I struggled my whole life ever since I had started my period. I really struggled with it. And so to make that decision wasn't hard for me because I knew that it needed to be done. And then I did not realize that afterwards I would be like, did I mess up by taking one of our uteruses away? Like, your brain kind of almost messes with you there.
Yeah. Totally. I get it. But at least you still have one. Yeah, you still have one. This is good. It's good. We come with two. But okay, so you said you had already started trying. You were trying. So what about the donor?
Oh, the donor search. The search for Superman.
Yeah, superhuman.
Superhuman, yes. Superhuman.
So yeah, we started just like checking out all the banks. I think the two criteria that we were focused on were CMV status, and she is part Mexican. So we wanted to try, and since we knew we were going to be using my egg, that we wanted to try and have the donor match her as much as possible. So we did find one donor that has the same like heritage makeup as you, which is half Mexican, half Irish. So we're like,
oh,
perfect. Yeah. And then, you know, not to call somebody out, but somebody's on the shorter side. And so she also was like, if we can get a tall donor, that would be great too.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're better than me because I am extremely short. Like, I'm definitely probably shorter than you. And I was like, I don't want a tall donor. Fuck that. No tall donor. I don't want these kids to be towering over me. No, thank you. Like, I was so selfish.
That's so funny. That's really funny.
Yeah. So good for you.
Yeah. I was like, this is it. It's like such an interesting thing because we had never thought about doing that. And then you get on those sites and it's very overwhelming.
Yep. There's a lot of choices.
There's a lot of choices. And you're kind of like, well, actually, like, I do feel comfortable. As long as I think the CMV status was something we didn't know about, we had to learn about and make sure that was fine, which then narrows it down for you quite a bit. And
yeah. Also, just for everyone at home too, I do believe because my wife and I didn't do anything about that CMV status at all. And then found out like after we already had our sperm that, oh, you should think about that. But there is a shot they can give you or whatever.
Oh, very cool.
I think I'm talking about the right thing. God, I need to do some research. But yeah, both of us were like wrong for the donor or whatever. So we had to have this shot that like...
There is a thing for that too. And I don't know what it is, honestly, but I know that if you're not a match for like your partner, the donor or whatever, that you can get a shot for that. Anyways.
Right. So that's, yeah. And they were like, oh, it's not a big deal. We'll just do this. That's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody will be safe. So they have ways around that because, you know, people don't. And first of all, wait, I have to just say as a disclaimer. Yes, I know we are very scientific on this podcast. Clearly, we
say
all
scientific
terms and we know everything about the science. Not at all. But I also want to say, like, it's not like straight people, like, when they're thinking of getting together, wait a second, are you CMV positive or negative? Because nobody does that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you're covered. But anyway, so you use that as a criteria, of course.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. We actually did find two donors because due to vial availability, we wanted to be able to have a certain amount. And so we we just split it, I think it was 3 and 3. Mm-hmm.
Our number one choice, unfortunately, the Mexican-Irish guy, was very popular. Very popular. You have to call, like, you have to sign up for alerts, and you have to call in under a half hour when you get that alert. Otherwise,
he is sold out.
Yeah, his stuff is gone. But like you've talked about before, because there's like such a, you know, lack of racial minorities and donors, that, you know, that probably has something to do with it, that he is part Mexican.
Yeah, it narrows it down pretty quickly when you're going towards something that's non-white, right?
Yeah.
So it does. It narrows your search down tremendously in many instances, which is sad. But they are, you know, they are working towards more equity in that, and they are working towards more diversity.
Yeah.
Who knows how long it's going to take. But yeah, that is a thing, 100%.
I should probably just like go ahead and switch over to this, because clearly it's already affecting me.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have epilepsy, and I should have said that in our little 30-second intro, mm-hmm. too. So like a lot of neurological conditions, there are triggers for it. And so I'm getting over COVID right now. And so just like being sick and having like energy depletion triggers that. So every time I'm like, wait, what was I saying? That's like me having a little absence seizure, because I just cannot.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Usually it's very well managed, but right now it's definitely not, I'm not at my strongest. So anyways, yeah. But that was something going into it too, that, you know, before we started anything, even before searching for donors, the first thing I did was make an appointment with my neurologist, because mm-hmm. certain type of epilepsies are genetic, some are not. So that was one thing, is like, is this something that we need to be concerned about from that perspective? Like, you know, what are the chances? Because like I said, mine is very manageable. I don't think I would mind having a child with a type of epilepsy like I have, because it is so easy to control with medication. However, for some people, it is very debilitating, and it's a totally different situation. So, you know, I was like, what could that look like from a heritable aspect? But then from also being pregnant, I was like, is it even safe for me to be pregnant? Because right. ever since I started my period, I was told like, you can never be on hormones, because that lowers your seizure threshold. And uh-huh. so I always had a copper IUD for birth control. And so, yeah, I was very concerned about like, can I even be pregnant? And then obviously like being in a same-sex relationship, they're like, oh, are you going to do IVF? Because you might want to be concerned about like using those hormones. Yeah. So that was really where we started when we did decide to change mm-hmm. from adoption to conceiving. It was like, is this even a possibility between her endometriosis and my epilepsy? It was like, what are our options? What does it look like?
Even with two dang uteruses. Look at us.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't win them all. So,
no.
Okay. So what did you find out? And let's dig in. Let's do this.
Yeah. So in my case, the neurologist really was like, you know, aside from IVF, like aside from the hormones, like the type of epilepsy I have is not genetic, or most likely not genetic, because of the type of seizures I have. Some women with epilepsy, when they get pregnant, that's actually like a temporary cure for their epilepsy. My neurologist was like, I know one woman who had 5 kids just because she enjoyed being pregnant so much, because she had a break from the seizures. And the neurologist was like, you need to stop having kids just to not have seizures. I mean, it varies by person, but she was like, there aren't any like inherent concerns with you getting pregnant.
There also wasn't a ton of research we could find.
Yes, because not only is there neurological disorders, we're still learning so much. Like right. the brain is still like a new frontier in science.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, like that is tough. Then on top of that, like having research on women getting pregnant with epilepsy, that like narrows the field even more. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, again, even in the 20th century, they were still putting women in asylums for having epilepsy. They were feeble-minded. Yeah, women with epilepsy a lot of times had forced sterilization, so they had tubal ligations without their consent. Women getting pregnant with epilepsy is also pretty new. And then you add in the factor of us being a queer couple,
yeah.
using
yeah.
donor sperm and like which method, IUI versus IVF and the hormones and all of that, like our options for good research were just so limited. I've seen 2 neurologists, unfortunately, My first neurologist was a lesbian woman, and then she like moved to Asheville, and I was like, no,
you're a safer place in North Carolina.
So I saw another neurologist when she left and basically had the same thing. Like, here's what we know. There's a lot we still don't know.
Yeah.
Not really you're on your own kid, but kind of you're on your own kid.
You check too many marginalized boxes here. And the more marginalized you are, the less research there is. That's just the way it is. And it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrible. Take me through it. What do we do? What are we doing? And then let's get into the conversation because y'all reached out because of an episode that I had. Well, it was a double parter with Lisa, the therapist, and Dr. Mark about donor conception. It was all about donor conception.
Mm-hmm.
And you reached out because of a particular point that you wanted to make.
I would like to start off with a huge caveat that I am only speaking about my experience / our experience.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I have a disability, I, you know, am still learning so much about the disability community and the advocacy work that they've been doing. So I definitely do not speak on behalf of the disability community, nor is the disability community a monolith. And, you know, everybody has different preferences with the language that they use. So just because I'm using certain language or saying certain things, like, I do not speak on behalf of everybody. The episode that we were listening to that made me want to reach out to you, they had said something about prioritizing the genetic history, the medical history of the donors when you're searching. And that definitely struck a chord with us because to hear somebody say, like, you shouldn't choose a donor based on their medical history sounds to us like, well, then you're not qualified to be parents because of your medical history.
But what you're saying is to not like to rule a donor out based on certain medical history that you see is the issue that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. So like to say like you shouldn't pick a donor because they have a history of epilepsy is like saying, well, because you have epilepsy, you shouldn't be using your biological material to create a child. You know, that's just obviously like not how we feel, A, and B, I mean, I don't know if endometriosis is considered a disability. We probably should have.
I don't know, actually.
It should be. Shout out to all the people who are living with endometriosis because, like, it is, we have learned so much since she got her diagnosis, and it is, like, wild how still underappreciated it is in terms of, like, how debilitating it is.
And there's no research, of course. So this strikes a very personal chord for you.
Mm-hmm.
Rightly so, right? Like if they said to rule out, this is just a shot in the dark, I'm being silly here. But if they had said, you know, you should, you know, start with height and, you know, rule out the, you know, the ones that are not at the right height for you, then that is going to strike a personal chord for me because what about the short people of the world? We deserve a chance too.
Exactly. No, it's the same thing because it is like we have both lived very fulfilling lives. Like there's still, you can have a disability and still live out your dreams and do a lot of things. And, you know, like life is difficult. More difficult from that aspect, but everybody experiences difficulties in their lives for different things. And it doesn't mean that you can't reproduce or you can't parent. And like I said, with being a woman with epilepsy, it especially strikes a chord because for so many decades, they stripped women with epilepsy of even the ability to reproduce by institutionalizing them and sterilizing them. So it is, it's very much like I wanted to have the opportunity to just like say that for anyone with a disability listening that, you know, I want to affirm everybody's right to choose whether they want to be a parent or contribute biological material to a child. Like, I think that everybody has the right to choose and you can still have kids that have amazing, fulfilling lives. And again, like they might have struggles if they are born with a disability, but everybody has struggles and,
I think like in my head, it goes back to what you had already said of, do our heterosexual counterparts, when they meet, are they like, before we decide to get married, before we have kids, let's do a full genetic workup.
Right. And so this is the thing, right? So this is where it gets dicey. And like, it gets dicey here because we have the choice here now, right? Mm-hmm. And heterosexual folks who do it, you know, who baby dance the old fashioned way,
they don't have a choice. They have to take what they have, you know, or, you know, then come on our side and figure out this whole mess that we have to go through to make our families. So we're all of a sudden like given all of this choice. And it can be very overwhelming, as you know, to try and like pick this person who is going to be the 50% of your offspring that you create. Mm-hmm. It feels like such a huge monumental decision. And so, you know, we look to the experts for helping us narrow down these choices. What are the important decisions? What are the important choices that you make? And I think it's very important to stress that it's different. You know, it can be different for everyone. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely.
And to be fair to like Dr. Mark and Lisa, the therapist, that's what I will always call them. They have three names. To be fair to them, they did say, you know, start with, they stress that it's important from a doctor's perspective to start from the medical history and work from there. They didn't necessarily say, you know, rule out people with disabilities. Like, I don't think that was actually said, but I understand how that struck a chord 100%, right? And also, I do understand, like, when you do look at medical history and things, well, I guess I was thinking of family history, but I'm medical history. I didn't even look at medical. I didn't look at any medical. I don't even know. Like, what do you get with the medical history? I'm not even sure.
I'm not sure. I mean, I remember just because we're pretty recent at it, they had the full genetic panel and our clinic made you the genetic testing. We didn't want to test her.
The genetic panel.
Because so first of all, going back to your point, like I absolutely agree with what you're saying and like affirm everybody's right to choose like what they're looking for in donors. And I know it is different for everybody. And I'm always very conscious of like some things that I say from a disability perspective come off sounding very like pro-life, which I'm pro-life in the full life spectrum, but I am not anti-abortion. I am very much like pro-choice. And
I never even went there, but I, you know.
Yeah. Like if you are pregnant and find out that your fetus is most likely going to be born with a disability or something, like, that's absolutely up to every parent to choose, like whether they want to move forward with that pregnancy or not. I am not going to stand on a platform and say, should have a kid with a disability.
You're not here telling everybody, listen, you should just have all the babies. Like, right. That's not what you're saying. Like, it's
not at all.
It is up to everyone, of course.
And, you know, I think it's just advocating for reform in the fertility industry. So there are better, you know, regulations and safeguards. And more choice too. Back to the genetic testing. The clinic we used, they made me get genetic testing to make sure that, because like Vanessa said, we had two donors so that we could at least get six vials. Mm-hmm. And they each were carriers for a different genetic disorder.
Okay.
And so they wanted me to get a full genetic panel done as well to see if I was potentially a carrier for something.
Right.
But I said, I do not want that. I only want to get tested for the things that they're like, if I have to do it, I'm just going to get tested for the things that they're carriers for. And thankfully that came back negative for me. I was not a carrier for either of those things. So we could use
both. Oh, and they let you do that. Okay. I thought you were going to say that they refused that. And then it
matched. No, I am very grateful. I have worked with genetic counselors for 4 years in my job. And so I know a lot about like the genetic testing side of things from that. And so I was able to, you know, get more information from my colleagues before going into this. And I was able to advocate for myself a little bit more in that process just because I had a little bit more knowledge. I don't know. The average person going through that probably would get a full, which again, like nothing wrong with getting a full panel of genetic testing if that's what you want. I just didn't want that.
And it's good to know that you could do that because I wouldn't have known.
I haven't researched into, I only looked into the bank that we used, but like, different banks have different criteria for who they'll accept for donors. And, you know, that's another thing where it's very difficult to be accepted as a donor if you have any sort of medical history or family history or genetic history, which again, like from one aspect of it, I totally get it. But other things are very ableist. Again, I'm hesitant to say this because I am not deaf. I don't know anyone who's deaf, but I've heard that like people in the deaf community see it as some of them, maybe not all of them, see it as a culture. So I can imagine if there were like a deaf queer couple that they may want a donor mm-hmm. who's deaf or, you know, has that genetic predisposition to being deaf because they see that as a culture. I am hesitant to say all this because I don't know, and I'm sure right. it varies by person. I don't think it's like right. is true for everything, but I think, you know, just saying because you have a genetic predisposition for something doesn't mean that you should be, you know, not have the opportunity to contribute your genetic material. And then yeah, it, you know, it comes down to like giving people the choices that they want when building their family, just like race. And, you know, you've talked about race on this podcast a lot. And I just wanted to bring that like disability aspect to it, too, that, you know, those choices are even more limited. I don't think right. you're going to find a donor with a disability.
No, I think you're right. I because even when you were talking about, you know, the medical records and the fact that you have epilepsy and, you know, if a donor has epilepsy, I'm thinking in my head, I wonder if there even would be a donor who had epilepsy. I don't know, though. That is a question I don't know the answer to. I don't know if there are non-hearing donors. I don't know if they, you know, like, yeah, like, and I do want to point out as well, and I think that the issue here is awareness and accessibility and just keeping in mind all aspects of humanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the disability community is repeatedly, habitually left off of the table when talking about anything, right? Yeah. Even when you say DEI, right?
Mm-hmm.
You should say DEIA, right, for accessibility, but not everybody says that. And right. not everybody goes to DEIA training. They go to DEI training. Even that little tiny thing
mm-hmm.
it is left off a lot. I agree. And that's why I thought it was important to come on and hear your perspective, right? I'm still going to weed out the donor who has alcoholism, right? Because because that runs really strong in my family. You know what yeah. I mean? I'm still going to try to weed out certain things because I know that those are things I don't want,
right?
You know,
yeah.
if I can help them not get a double whammy, I'm yeah. going to weed it out. You know, I don't want my kid to have acne. I can't really do anything about that. Right. But yeah. Things we think about, some of them, right.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about this huge issue, I'm just trying to like summarize it and make it this, you know, umbrella thing and say, like, I thought it was really important to hear what y'all had to say because if we're really going to be all about uplifting the marginalized, if we are really going to be about uplifting and highlighting our beautiful identities in all of their forms, then this can't be left off the table as well. This needs to be right. talked about. I completely 100% agree. And I never thought of that perspective of thinking of different disabled communities who maybe want actually to continue it. Like, who are we to say? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who are we to decide that that is a genetic that is an unwanted genetic? And that I completely understand you there, 100%. Mm-hmm. It also is still, you know, every person's choice. However,
right. yeah.
the choices should be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
yeah. It's just, again, like up to the individuals building a family to make those decisions for themselves yeah. and their families. And like you said, like they're just need to be the option so that they can make a decision based on what they're choosing versus what yeah. the reproductive fertility industry has chosen for them.
Yeah. I think the issue is like, if I'm hearing you correctly, is like more with kind of like the choices that are given, like the decisions that are made as to what genetics are good and what genetics are bad, and then trickle down to us and we get what is decided somewhere else. Right.
Yeah.
And it's especially important for our families because we have to rely on this in so many instances. We have to rely on the help of donor genetics or, you know, all these things. So
yeah.
that's what I feel like you're saying, because like starting from the medical background, you know, that's fine as long as you have all the choices. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So you can look at it and see what you want to weed out and what you don't. Yeah. No, I think, you know, going back to that episode that we heard, it wasn't what was said that was problematic. It was more like I was hoping to hear them make some sort of like caveat to it, like start with medical history, but you don't need to rule somebody out if they have a history of XYZ. Like, you know, it's up to you to choose what's right for your family. I think.
Yeah, the caveat was missing. Mm-hmm. Start with medical history. And also, that's all your business. And, you know, you have to make the choice that works for you personally, right?
Mm-hmm. And that if you have a disability, you are still you have every right to make that decision on whether you want to be a parent, whether you want to contribute biological material.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the part that was missing.
Medical history, but also, we're not telling you what part of the medical history to weed out. That's up to you, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of a thing. Because for me, like I have depression in my family and suicide, and I would weed that out personally, right? Mm-hmm. So it's up to everybody individually.
Yeah.
So I totally get what you're saying. And we should have all the choices in the world.
And on that note, we wrap up, I do just wanted to like point out, because this is the Queer Family Podcast. I mean, that's another, we as queer people are a marginalized group that's been overlooked. And, you know, another aspect of like being a donor, some banks still have, like, you can't donate if you have sex with men or whatever. And so I think because that weeds out a lot of queer people from being in the donor pool, you know, we do have a concern that's like, well, what if we have an ID donor and our kid turns 18 and they can meet their donor? Like, we don't know if that person's going to be homophobic, you know, whereas like if there were more queer people in the donor pool, then we could feel comfortable saying like, oh, like when our kid turns 18, they'll, you know, have this like other thing in common, or they won't feel judged for having queer parents, you know, like it is. So that is an aspect that I just wanted to highlight too, that, you know, I wish there were a way that more queer people could be accepted as donors. I mean, we know so much more about HIV now.
Gay man, they just lifted the blood donation.
Yes, that was huge. Yes, that just happened.
Yeah, it was just all gay men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
Crazy.
Yes.
So that is an interesting point, because I have thought about that a lot. Like, I would have wanted a gay donor. Mm-hmm. Hands down, I would have chosen. That was like one of the things you could like, criteria you could like weed things out through. Mm-hmm. I totally would put in gay and see what I see. Yeah, it would be great to know, take away one unknown, to know that at least this person, I mean, you never know what could happen in a life, but it's most likely that the person will accept our family if they ever get to know us. So, and that's a good point to make too. And why is it up to whoever the hell it is to decide that that's something that we're not going to do? I'd also just love to know.
Yeah, 100%.
Epilepsy is not a bad thing to you. Mm-hmm. Gayness is not a bad thing to us, right? So if we take it on that scale, that really does put things in perspective there. And it's just not fair for the outside to decide what is desirable and what isn't, because it's different for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mind your own business. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's very funny. Our second donor, I'll say it. We chose our second donor because his favorite animal was a dog, but his favorite pet was a raccoon, which I love raccoons and I really want raccoons. And I was like, this is perfect. Obviously, this donor's just like me.
Meant to be. And what the hell kind of a statement is that? I like dogs, but as a pet, I like raccoons.
I mean,
I mean, he's a guy I want to know. A guy I want to know. You know what but that's, and this is the point I wanted to bring this to 100%, is that in the end, we all choose our donors for the craziest freaking reason.
Yes.
And yes, we can listen to Dr. Mark all day long say, you should start with this, and then you should go through here, and then go to the heart. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what, I bet you 95% of us start with the damn heart. And then get stuck on that heart and overlook a lot of the medical things and the things that we said in the beginning. No, wait, I don't want that. We can't do that, right? It comes down to a heart decision, because we're making one of the hugest decisions of our lives. It feels like, especially, when you're in the process, and it is, because you're creating your freaking child. Like, you're creating half of the genetics, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's huge. It's monumental. And however you need to make that decision, you go ahead with your bad self.
Yes.
It's nobody's business except your own. And I know I didn't prioritize medical history. I don't even know. Like I said, did I even see the medical history? I don't even know. I looked at the family. I looked at his essay.
Yeah.
I listened to the audio clip, the 30-second audio clip.
Yeah. I looked at his little cute baby face. Uh-huh. I had old pictures. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, I can see my kid looking like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Come on. Listen, I bet you anything. Like 95% of us go with the heart. And mm-hmm. You know, and then we trickle down from there, and that's okay too.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like again, talking about our straight counterparts, like that's how they choose a partner, anyways, is right. on the heart. So, why shouldn't we also be afforded the same opportunity?
Yeah, I want to say something that my previous co-host and co-founder Robin used to say all the time. She used to say that, listen, if I did it with, if me and Mary can make a baby together, they would have my alcoholic genes, her, you know, and my big German butt genes and her something or other and her something or other, but we wouldn't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Because we love each other and we want to make a baby, right?
Yeah.
So that's really what it comes down to. The thing is, we get all this choice shoved in our faces. Great. And it's wonderful that we do, that we even have the choice, right? And then we get a little crazy. And sometimes we forget to include everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I really wanted to have you two on, like to come and bring this perspective in, because who are we if we're not including our community of disabled people? I think, yes. I'm supposed to say it like,
people have different preferences.
Right.
So, yeah.
So if I have offended anyone with any of my terms, I apologize and feel free to reach out.
Yeah, same. I have probably also used terms that other people would not prefer. We're all just doing our best. And like I said, I am still very much learning about this because, you know, I do think it's important. This is a community that I'm a part of and I don't even know, you know, I'm sure what I do know only scratches the surface. So yeah, it's definitely important to keep uplifting all the marginalized
voices.
Yeah.
Agreed. And in the name of inclusion and accessibility, this episode is important. And so I really thank you. And I really thank you for reaching out and agreeing to come on and talk and get a little nervous, but it's, you know, and you have to tell everyone where you're at right now with this because.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're very much in the thick of it. So send all the baby dust we're still trying. We haven't been successful yet. So
how long have you been trying?
4.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We had like I said, we had a very rough fall. I had my hysterectomy. I had an emergency gallbladder removal and a shoulder surgery all within the last 3 months. So, and trying. So it's been,
you know, yeah. I mean, I think we probably did not stack the cards in our favor when it comes to like stress. I think, you know,
we're working on it.
We're hoping 2024 will be healthier and less stressed out. So I'm not really surprised. It hasn't worked so far.
Well, what? But people get pregnant all the time, and it's also such a freaking miracle. So just remember that, like, it's a miracle. Every single conception is such a miracle when you think about it. And you know, you just take one step at a time. You take one baby step at a time. You do that appointment, and then you do that appointment, and then you do that appointment. Then you try not to look at any pregnancy tests, but you do anyway, and that's okay too. Right? Like,
we've been pretty good.
We have been pretty good.
We hear people who always like test early, but we wait the full 2 weeks.
Because I'm like, don't do it. Don't you do it.
And also, like, this is where the stress comes in handy. We're so distracted by everything else going on in our lives that it's not like top of mind. Like, am I pregnant? It's like, oh, you know, is Vanessa in pain? Let me deal with that first.
Oh, God. Well, there's a lot going on. In the end, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, it'll work out how it's supposed to work out.
You're going to get what you need. It's going to be great. And it's everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know what it's like. And you're in the thick of it. And we are all sending all that baby dust. And you have to let us know when you're comfortable letting us know, like what the outcome is. All the baby dust. You got this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for having us on here. This was not expected at all. I mean, even when you just read my email on that episode, I was so grateful to hear that. Yeah. And I actually had a friend reach out to me afterwards. She's like, I listened to that and I could just like hear your voice in every word. And I'm so grateful for you speaking on behalf, because she has her own medical issues that she deals with. And they're, she and her husband are trying to build their family as well. So I'm like, the fact that I even was able to like, just my words were able to touch a friend of mine. So hopefully.
Oh, that's so, you know what? I bet you it's even more, you know? So thank you. Because come on, we got to include everyone. We know what it feels like, right? So we gotta do better. And when you know better, you do better.
Exactly.
Maya Angelou and Dr. Lulu. Yeah. Sending to babies. Okay, this has been great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate it.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.